When you send me packing down in Green River Valley, I knew that if you couldn't, then no one would have
lost. Hey, this is Adam with Mile High Stash, the podcast that asks what five albums you would take to a remote Colorado cabin in the event of a zombie apocalypse. Armed with only food, water, and a crank-powered Victrola. I just got back to Colorado from seeing some baseball in Florida. I'm actually watching some baseball out of my office window right now in Longmont. Spring has sprung. So has my love for a young Colorado band called Jesus Christ Taxi Driver, which sprung from the ashes of a group called the Beavs when they imploded a few years back. I ran into Jesus Christ Taxi Driver frontman Ian Earhart at a bar in Lafayette, of all places, recently, literally in the bathroom, and then had him over to record an episode of Mile High Stash on the couch here. His band is punk rock in the truest sense of the word. I mean, Jesus Christ Taxi Driver is energetic, creative, and has no boundaries musically. I hear a lot of blues and 70s rock and African music, punk rock, even gospel. Ian is also profoundly affected by his Christian upbringing and mentions that a lot in his songs. And I learned a couple days after our conversation that Ian breaks the boundaries between performer and audience at every show. At the Crypt in Denver, he was in the crowd duck walking and spanking himself moments after Jesus Christ Taxi Driver's set even started. I guess seeing Iggy Pop in the 70s would have been something like that, but with peanut butter. Ian is a big fan of the Yoppers, which is a band that I was the original drummer for, and we talk about Nate and Jesse from the Yoppers a bunch of times during this chat, so don't be confused when those names come up. I also wanted to tell you all to check out my new article in Denver Westward about Arj Narayan, let's see if I say that right, from the great Denver band Fast Eddie. Arj has been known for clobbering his drums for many years, and now he is clobbering cancer. Fast Eddie and a hell of a lot more bands are playing the annual Rocker Mountain Ripper Fest in the Baker neighborhood in Denver on April 18th, 19th, and 20th. So check that out. And make sure not to miss America's best local music festival, Foco MX, in Fort Collins on April 19th and 20th. I'll be playing the drums with two bands on the 20th at Foco MX. All right, here's my conversation with Ian Earhart from Jesus Christ Taxi Driver. Shame on him for burying the lead somewhat and not mentioning until the end of our chat that the fantastic Emma Rose, who you might know from Big Richard and Sound of Honey, is playing bass with Jesus Christ Taxi Driver, which I love. See you right here after my chat with Ian. But first, a few words from this week's generous sponsor, the Boulder Roots Music Project.
The Boulder Roots Music Project believes in the power of music to make the world a better place, and all music starts locally. The Roots Music Project empowers artists and audiences to connect and create a thriving and inspiring local music scene. Based in Boulder, Colorado, the Roots Music Project's mission is to foster a DIY music scene with events such as concerts by local and national musicians, open mics, live interviews, and workshops. Head to rootsmusicproject.org for their event calendar and more information about this great Boulder nonprofit music incubator.
One of the big things I wanted to ask you about is just like listening to the Jesus Christ Taxi Driver Lick My Soul, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I was so surprised with where it went. You know, it starts out with this blues rock that's like a mixture of the Black Keys and what's that African artist that you mentioned?
Yeah, Ali Farka Touré.
Yeah, and it's just raging. And the album actually goes to a lot of places. And, you know, there's some, like, heartfelt stuff. There's some, like, gospel-influenced stuff. How did you, as a kid growing up in Erie, get exposed to apparently so many influences?
I don't know. I mean, like, when I grew up and me and my best friend met and started a band called The Beavs and in middle school, and we were just, like, walking home from middle school to her house every day, and we had, like, a shared love of, like, Black Sabbath and Green Day, just, and, like, AC/DC, like, heavy kind of music, and I don't know. It's just kind of, like, I mean, we had the base of our parents, like, with the Beatles and Joni Mitchell and like, old blues and stuff like that. But I don't know. I think it just comes from, like, loving music so much and just, like, diving deeper into every little aspect of everything.
When did that start for you? The diving deeper.
Well, in kindergarten, I remember, I mean, you know, so I was always into the Beatles and everything like that as a kid. But then in kindergarten, my friend reached across the table and he was like, dude, and this is at Catholic school too. He's like, dude, you ever heard of Black Bloody Sabbath? And I was like, holy shit, that sounds crazy. Yeah. And we went after school and listened to Iron Man in his dad's car. And it was just like, holy shit, this, I've like never heard anything so heavy in my life. And it's just like, this is like not like nothing I've ever heard before. And I think that was like the beginning of me just finding my own music.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, like I said, it's kind of just like loving music and kind of digging deeper and everything and finding all those influences that influence that and influence this and that.
Were your parents music geeks?
Kind of. I mean, yeah, my mom and dad both played guitar. I found like old tapes of theirs, like singing Joni Mitchell and Beatles songs and stuff. So yeah, like kind of. And my dad's a songwriter; he's a really good.
But not
songwriter.
Heavy stuff. But
no, he's like he's like a folky kind of like Buddy Holly type.
Yeah, it's great when we find out what music is ours. And like, my kid is downstairs sneezing right now, and you know, she fell asleep to Brian Eno until she was like 12, like every single night. And so she was just raised in a home where there was lots of different music around. And just recently she's saying stuff like, have you heard this band, the Deftones? They're amazing. And I'm like, yeah, I remember that. And I liked that when I was the same age as you, but like there's a certain kinds of music that she just didn't know existed because we don't listen to it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's great when you have that moment. Like, I remember hearing Metallica's And Justice for All when I was 8 and feeling like the whole world had changed. It was just like, how did I not know that this existed?
No, and I keep feeling that over and over. And, like, I'm like, I must be done. Like, I must have my bands all. But then I hear something else, and, like, I just heard something yesterday, actually. I was going to show you because it kind of sounded like the Oblivion stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like this kind of like Mexican punk rock band that's pretty new. And it's like, oh my God, this all sounds so new to me and cool. Yeah. And I'm like, this keeps fucking happening and it will just always happen, I guess, hopefully.
Yeah. So you answered another question of mine, which was, do you feel like you know what the Jesus Christ Taxi Driver sound is? Like, do you have your influences set in stone and, you know, do you sit down and say, this is what our band sounds like, or it's just always changing?
Yeah, it's a complicated question too, because like, I mean, I do try to think about that all the time, because it's hard to, because that's the first question that everybody asks, is what is your genre? What genre do you play? Like, I just say rock and roll, but you know, I love pretty much all types of music, so it all kind of works its way in there in some way. And like being a band, like even though this particular record was a different circumstance and we had the hired musicians, like I said, the Yoppers pretty much.
Yeah.
But you know, their influence, even though it's kind of like my thing, their influences seep in, and that's how it was in the Beavs too, is like everybody's different influences would seep in and kind of make something like that, you know, none of us individually could have made.
Yeah. And you also have a lot of Catholic influence.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's this song, Goat Hell, which is a play on Goat Hell on the Mountain. And then the next song is Catholic.
Diabolical Catholic.
Diabolical Catholic. So what happened? Like, what's
well,
your...
I don't know if I was raped or not as a child by a priest, or, but no, I think it was, like I said, I went to Catholic school, and that, I think I was just, you know, first born, and my parents were just doing what their parents wanted, probably, and because, like, they're not overly religious or anything, and I don't know. I don't know why they did that, but... I don't know. I just had a weird experience because, you know, as a kid, your brain is just so soft and you're just kind of taking everything in, and people are telling you, you know, you're either going to go to heaven or you're going to go to hell, and that's it. And you think bad thoughts or you do bad things, and I say that in air quotations, but you go to hell and you suffer eternally. And
that's a crazy thing to tell a kid.
Right. It's so scary.
Yeah.
Because you fully believe that. Like, you know, I believe in fucking Santa Claus and leprechauns and Tooth Fairy and everything. Like,
and Jesus.
And Jesus. Yeah, and Jesus is going to come, take me, and pound me into hell.
Yeah. I mean, make no mistake, Jesus really did live. But I'm talking about, like, you know, this Jesus as a superhero who, like smashed a boulder and multiplied the loaves and the fishes and then rose up to heaven.
And was born to the Virgin Mary.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean... So that stuff, you know, you start hearing contradictions in things. And even with your kid brain, you're like, wait, but you just told me. So you're saying gay people go to hell, and but love everybody, like, but hate these people. Or like, and all these contradictions are just like, even in a kid's brain, you're like, I think you're lying to me now. Like, because everything just starts getting so confusing. It's just not the...
When did you find out Santa Claus wasn't real?
I think I was probably a ripe age of 10. I don't know.
10? That's maybe, pretty late. Is that late? What do you think about it?
Yeah, probably a normal time, I think. I remember, I remember, like, my parents sitting me on their bed, and I was like, makes sense. It's so crazy, like, how this stuff just, like, gets pounded into your brain, and then you... genuinely are like, because I remember seeing Santa Claus, like, for real, fly a sleigh through buildings, and I was like, yeah, that's, he's real, holy shit. It's crazy.
And this was just a couple,
there's no way I
months
saw
ago
that. No. When I was 10 or no.
Yeah, I was raised Catholic too, and I do remember this tangible, like, when I found out that Santa Claus wasn't real, which I think was about 9, it did make me question everything else too. It's like, well, what about this Jesus guy? Like, what about all this stuff? No, that's totally real. It was hard to weigh those things.
But it's kind of, it's kind of like the same magic.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. When was the last time you, like, took communion?
Just now.
Just now. We are drinking wine. We are drinking wine out of goblets, like it's like it's Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
These look like they came out of Jesus's cave. I don't remember, but I do remember. So after Catholic school, I asked if I could leave and go to public school, mostly because, like, all my friends were going to Erie Public School, and I was just like, I don't know. I'm freaked out. I'm still freaked out by, like, cults and everything. And I think religions are kind of big cults. I went to a public school in Erie, and then, but I stayed in, like, what is it called?
CCD, like, night
catechism.
I got kicked out of that.
Oh, nice.
I know what you're talking
about. I wish.
Like, Wednesday night.
I remember I got in an argument about, of that very thing of, like, gay people will go to hell because they're sinning. And I was like, that's not right. Like, and I remember getting into a big argument with the teachers.
Yeah, you're not, like, supposed to ask questions. That's kind of a big thing.
Yeah, right. And it turns out, like, 4 or 5 people in that class were gay out of the, like, 10.
Wow.
Yeah.
I remember getting into a big CCD argument that led to me being kicked out, like in the eighth grade, because I asked about dinosaurs. I was like, how come they're not
what
in
are
the Bible?
You fucking stupid kid.
Yeah. There's this whole
fairy tales.
There's this whole Bill Hicks routine that you might have heard where he says, you know, God actually planted the bones of dinosaurs all over the earth to test our faith in him. And so just imagine God as like a practical joker, like walking around the earth with a shovel, like, I'm just going to put these here. It's going to be
idiots.
So funny.
But giant lizards?
Yeah, yeah.
Lizards aren't that big. Fucking idiots.
When did you start your first band?
Well, me and my best friend Margo, the one I was talking about walking home from school with, I was in sixth grade, so we started writing songs about our teachers, like parodies. Like one of them was called Mr. Duhon, and it was like to the tune of Mr. Crowley.
Nice.
By Ozzy.
Because you had recently discovered Ozzy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So we kind of, we started writing those songs, and our teachers kind of started having us like tour the classrooms. So we'd make up a parody of all the teachers and go to their classroom and sing it and offend them. And that felt, you know, that was like, whoa.
Did you get sent to the principal's office for that?
No.
No, they liked it?
Because they loved it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we were just roasting teachers, and we did it in a musical way. So, you know, it was, nobody cared. But, yeah, it was my first taste of the lifestyle of the sex, drugs, and rock and roll. We started walking home. We both played the tuba. So we'd walk our tubas home to her house, and it felt like the only two that played guitar. So I'm like, you have a guitar? I have a guitar too. Holy shit. Yeah. And then like that day we like started walking to her house every single day after school. And we started a band called the Purple Zebras.
And this is at age like 12, 13?
Yeah. And, we just played talent shows, and then we played like, open mics around town and stuff like that. Really bad. Like we made a
CD. Open mics in Erie or Boulder?
Open mics in Erie. Because
nice.
Also at this time we still had no like idea that music scenes existed. We know Black Sabbath existed, and we know that AC/DC existed, but we don't know like that there are other people like just
it's
starting
only you.
Bands.
You're the
like,
only ones.
Yeah, which is weird because like there truly was no other band from Erie,
right?
And we were just. You know, and we didn't have social media or anything.
Right, yeah.
It was just like, this is what it is. And, you know, no streaming or anything. So we just had the CDs that we listened to or whatever. I guess we had iTunes and MP3s at that time, but
screw it. What year was this? Like, did you have a MySpace?
No, you know? I never had a MySpace. I do remember getting Facebook in, like, 2009.
Yeah.
But, so it was just like that. And that we, we're just playing open mics. And it was like, man... best times of my life, like just ride around in the back of Margo's dad's truck to the gig with like we got a bass drum and a snare drum, and we had our guitars, and we'd switch off on drums and guitar and just play like AC/DC and whatever, like, and
I hope there are videos of this.
Yes there are. There's us at our talent show doing the Mr. Duhon. And then there's one of us. What you teaching us now? Is it multiplication or division? Yeah, you think of it all. Great.
This should be like a B-side on the next album.
True, I know. I want to re-record it because I feel so bad about how bad the recording is that we originally did. We just were like, you know, my dad was like, I'll record it. I'll figure it out. Like, Mike. And then we're just like, whoa. Let's put everything on this. Yeah. So it's just like there's so much going on. Like, what
with GarageBand?
I don't even know. I don't know. But yeah, and then we'd just like drive around to the open mics in the back of the truck, screaming rock and roll.
That's
rock
amazing.
And roll. And like it didn't matter how bad we were ever. It just felt like the best thing.
Yeah.
And like I was, we're the fucking best.
So when did you find out that there was a music scene like in Boulder or Denver?
That was when we started the Beavs, and that was, I think that was 2016, but what we started doing first was just busking on Pearl Street, and so that was kind of like, because we've seen other people doing that, so it's, we didn't, you know, we didn't know how to book a show or anything. So people do that, and it looks like that's what you do. You just go there, and you put your instruments up, and you start playing. We put my shoes out, and people gave us money. And it was crazy. Like, we did that for like a year, and it was so lucrative, weirdly. Like,
yeah,
more lucrative than being a local band and playing at fucking Lost Lake.
Well, if they give you
an AEG show.
Yeah, like if you're lucky enough to get an opening set at the Bluebird or the Fox, they'll be like, well, you get $75 or something.
Yeah.
If you busk for a whole day, what, like a couple hundred dollars?
Yeah, well, we were doing 3 hours at a time because I also had this flea market guitar that, like, the action was like an inch off the fretboard. So it was like I would bleed profusely every time I played it.
Yeah.
And it was really hard, and we're just screaming because it's, you know, no mics, and we're all just singing the same melody, no harmonies or anything yet. But this is when my brother involved, Will. Yeah. He started playing drums with us, so that was the Beavs. And then, we'd make $300 in 3 hours, but that's all we could do is 3 hours.
Yeah, so that's still a lot.
Yeah, and then we'd have to wait a couple of days till our voices came back, and then we'd do it again. And that was what we did for a year until, like, well, people started, like, coming up to us, and we're like, you want to open the show at the Boulder Theater or something? And we're like,
Yeah.
And so that kind of stuff started happening. And
then, what year is this?
I think this would be 2017 then when we started like actually booking real shows.
And you were in high school when this was happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. And did you go to college?
No, because I believed in this so much.
Yeah, fantastic.
The only school that I got into was Berkeley, but without any scholarships, it's $60,000 a year.
You're talking about Berkeley with two
College
E's.
Of Music, not the smart people Berkeley, the John Mayer Berkeley.
Smart in a different way. Yeah.
No, but I remember visiting Berkeley and was just like, sorry to offend any Berkeley people, but like, these people are kind of stuck up.
Well,
like, I don't think they... did you go to Berkeley? Sorry.
No, yeah, right. I never even, like, had a lesson, let alone went to music school.
You're a punk rocker.
I guess so, yeah. So the Beavs officially forms and you're doing real shows. You know, like you went from the high school talent show or even the junior high talent show to... opening shows.
Yeah, we were over talent shows by the time we hit high school.
Yeah. And then you're opening shows for bands like the Yoppers at the Fox. And I remember seeing your name all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy how, like, that childlike wonder of just, like, once we figured out, like, oh, this is how you do this. And, like, we can do all of this ourselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're meeting bands like... the Velveteers and the Yoppers and other cool local bands, and just getting inspired, like, holy shit, there's a bunch of people like us, and they're all doing, like, you know, and maybe they're better than us, but I think we're better. You know, it's just like the childlike kind of confidence that it is, like, I don't know, it just felt so full of potential, and so it was easy to take it just and run with it, because it felt so good too. It was just like the best catharsis of my life. I felt like my whole life has led up to this moment, and this is what I've always wanted to do, and I'm doing it. Like when you play the Fox or something like that, it's just wild.
I remember being a part of a music scene in San Francisco in my 20s, and then being a part of a music scene here since I was in the Yoppers, which we started that band when I was 30. And it's really great to be a part of a scene and see other bands that, even if you think you can be better than them someday, just seeing them and thinking, oh shit, they're really good. Like, I gotta work on my shit. It makes you so much better.
And it was kind of like a healthy competition kind of thing, because, like, oh my gosh, every single band, I was just like, I respect every band.
Yeah.
And now I'm like a little more jaded.
Yeah.
But in the beginning, it was just like, whoa, you're doing this. You're doing this. This is wild.
Yeah.
Especially the offers.
Well, there was also back then, there was the Branded Bandits, which became the Bandits, which is now Pink Fuzz.
Right.
And they're phenomenal.
Yeah.
You know. So the Beavs was you and your brother and your best friend.
Yes.
It was always a trio?
Yes.
Yeah. So, all right. I'm going to ask you about that in a minute, but I want to get like your first two albums that you would take to a remote Colorado cabin in the event of a zombie apocalypse.
Well, well, well.
Yeah.
I thought about this profusely all day to a painful extent. And the answer I came up with was I would just bash my head in with a rock.
You would just commit
until
suicide.
Until I died. Yes.
We haven't got this answer yet, but that's it. No albums, just death.
Okay, I'll give you albums, but I'm going to feel bad leaving some out. Okay, I'll say the Blue Album by Joni Mitchell.
Okay. Let's just do two for now.
Two for now?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And then why the Blue Album
by the Beatles.
The White Album by the Beatles and the Blue Album. Is this going to be like a color coordinated five?
Yes.
That's awesome. It sounds like you listened to both of those albums a lot growing up, I would assume.
Yeah, yeah. So that's probably, yeah. Yeah, those are probably the first two.
Like the first two that you fell in love with or just the first you heard?
I mean, at least, you know, Joni Mitchell and the Beatles, but I don't know about the particular albums.
Right. And it says a lot that after all these years, like, you're not sick of either of those
yeah,
artists.
Yeah, it sticks with you. I mean, yeah. Do you have those albums, like, that you grew up with that just, like, I mean, because they kind of make you, you know, oh, I forget the word.
Who you are?
They make you who you are.
Yeah.
They make you, oh, my God, I had it again, and then I forgot.
They make you a lover.
Nostalgic.
Nostalgic, yeah. Well, that album, for me, is Master of Puppets. I remember being, like 9 years old, and when my family would go on vacation, I would listen to Master of Puppets on headphones. And so it's nostalgic, and it helped me to fall in love with, like, heavy music. But also, I don't know if you have any of these albums, but, like, if I was introduced to that now, I might not like it. But the fact that I loved it back then means no matter what, Master of Puppets will just be like a part of me.
Totally.
I love it so much.
I just re-listened to American Idiot by Green Day.
Yeah.
For the first time in so many years, because that came out in like 2004.
It was
and I remember when it came out and everything and like got the shirt and was just like, and we, like my dad played Dookie and stuff when we were driving to kindergarten all the time, but I remember when American Idiot came out. That was probably the first Green Day album that I was aware of. That, and oh my God, I was just like, yeah.
So what did you think of it? All these years
again,
later, yeah.
Oh, you know, it's embarrassing. Some of it, but also there's just parts of it that I'm just like, oh, like it brings back this like thing that I can't. It's an indescribable kind of feeling that's just like, oh man, this feels comfortable.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think that their album after Dookie, which was called
Insomniac. That's Insomniac. My favorite one.
I think that album is so overlooked and so underrated. And the reason is that like they're from Berkeley with an EY, you know, at the end, and Oakland, that punk scene at Gilman Street. And when they got really, really famous with Dookie, all those people hated them.
Right.
And
all their punk cohorts.
Yeah. And Billy Joe was still going to shows at Gilman Street, like in disguise, because he loved the music still. And I feel like Insomniac was their response.
Right.
You know, they're like, no, actually, we're a punk band. We're going to make a hard album.
Yeah.
And I don't think it sold a lot of copies. And in hindsight, that album fucking kicks ass. That's a great
Well, because
record.
It's got the pop.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's got the pop aspect that, you know, people love about Green Day, but then it's fucking hard as shit. Like, Jaded.
The song that comes after. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God.
That's the shit.
Yeah. That's what I listen to when I'm, like, I want to punch the wall.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm glad you agree with that. Nate does, too.
So the first song on the debut Jesus Christ Taxi Driver album is about the breakup of the Beeps.
Yes.
And I don't know the story of why you broke up or like whether you're still, I mean, hopefully you're still friends with your brother. At least kind of. You still have a relationship with him.
Yeah.
You don't have to like each other. But
he's in Jesus Christ Taxi Driver.
He's in Jesus Christ Taxi Driver. See, I don't know shit about shit. That's why we're, you know.
This is the only way to know.
Yeah.
Get me in your living room. Give me some agave give me wine some wine. And I'll tell you anything.
Baby. Yeah. And it sounds from that song that like, you were canned, like you were fired from the band. Is so if from a total outsider like me, it's like, is that what happened? They fired you?
No, it's just felt like the band was shunned, and it's a hard thing to talk about, but it's like I've been talking about it, and it's like the love of my life. It was like the most, it felt like the most important thing in the world to me and changed my life forever. And I thought it was going to be the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And then through unforeseen circumstances, it's just suddenly gone. And so, you know, it's kind of a kitschy, like, Wizard of Oz reference.
Yeah.
But like trying to laugh it off a little bit, but also like, yeah, the Biebs are dead. And the reason it's the first song is, and it was the first single, and I fought for this too, because it feels like the moving on song. Like it's just like, okay, this is now I'm doing a new thing, and I'm gonna do a new thing. I'm not gonna try to, you know, dig up old bones and then this is I don't think anybody knows this. Really, but the last song on the album is the last song that the Biebs recorded together.
Oh, really?
Roger.
Oh, wow. How did that feel to put that on the album?
It felt great. I also got some pushback on that, but I do what I want.
Yeah.
Because I'm a big boy. But yeah, I love that song too. That was like, that's one of my favorite songs that I've ever written. Because it was one of those songs that just came like in 20 minutes or whatever, and I didn't feel like I had to overthink anything.
Yeah,
it's just like, huh, feels good.
How cathartic was that scream in Ding Dong, the Biebs Are Dead? That sounds like you're just getting all the rage out.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of screams all over the record. I like screaming. That's what we did all on Pearl Street, it feels like.
Yeah.
And it does feel like that. I like, that's why I think I still love punk so much, is because it feels like catharsis for me. And it's strange because, you know, the Jesus Christ Taxi Driver is not like a full-on punk band. Like, I don't think many people would describe it as a punk band even, but it feels like a punk band to me. At least it carries the ethos of a punk band, because it's just it's about pure self-expression and just, you know, being able to just let all this shit kind of flow out of you that is human and maybe painful, maybe happy, all these emotions. It's like, I can tell when bands are just like keeping it all in, and like, you know, they're like either trying to act cool or something, like, but there's so many moments on stage with Jesus Christ Taxi Driver and the Biebs, like, where I feel like I'm making a fool of myself, but it feels real, and so it feels good. And I you know, after the show's over, I feel good about it, because I was my honest self, and that's where I feel most like myself.
Oh, I'm sure the audience responds to that too.
I think so. I think it's nice to like see somebody. I think, at least for me, it's nice to see somebody on stage, like, because it's weird, that divide of like, they're up higher than me and we paid money to see them, and like, this is like the focal point of the thing. But it, in that punk ethos, I think it's like, I want it to feel like we're all in this room together, and this is all like, without the audience, we don't exist, and without us, they don't exist. And it's just this coalescence of like something that should feel like, I don't know, just pure and like honest.
Yeah.
And I don't want people to be looking at me like, whoa, he's so cool. He's so much better than me or whatever.
Well, let's be real. What you're talking about, which is what audiences respond to in rock and roll, they don't teach that at the Berklee College of Music.
Right.
So maybe you would have been there for 4 years and learned how to play a Mixolydian scale and a diminished minor seventh, you know, but the audience, for the most part, wouldn't care.
Right.
So maybe you lucked out not going there.
Yeah. I mean, I think I have too much trouble learning anyway, and I don't know if I would have. Too much ADD.
What was a band that you saw that made you feel that way when you were growing up?
Man, crazy enough, it was like these local like ska punk bands, even like...
the early Beeps had some ska too.
Oh yeah. The AOKs, I remember my dad won some like tickets to this gothic show and it had like 10 bands on it. Mm. It was like ska night. And looking back, you know, this was like one of my first shows. So, I just didn't know really what to expect all that much. You know, the Gothic's like 1200 capacity venue, but it like, it was, you know, kind of not too many people there. And, but there was that whole punk scene that I'd never seen before in my life. And, I mean, maybe I've seen it in like kind of documentaries or something, but I was like, oh my God, this is real. And it's here in Denver. And, yeah, I mean, you know, and that's another thing, like I go back to and I can't listen to that anymore. Like,
yeah,
but in that moment it was like, whoa, these people. And also I could talk to them afterwards and like introduce myself, even though I'm like, you know, so nervous and shaky. And, but they're just like, now a lot of them are like my friends, and it's like, oh yeah, these are just people playing music 'cause they love it. And yeah.
That's so interesting, you know, because I come up from Pittsburgh where the punk scene is like, that's the music scene. That's the people that as soon as you start playing shows who you meet. But maybe for a kid from Erie, it was like you watching a movie like The Decline of Western Civilization, which maybe you watched, and then seeing those people for real would have been like watching Lord of the Rings and then going somewhere and there's hobbits here, like they're real, they really they really exist.
Yeah, totally.
That's amazing.
Well, and it felt like this is where I'm like supposed to fit in too. I feel like I can fit in this. But and you know, like we started playing Seventh Circle and stuff that, and that was, oh my gosh, like Aaron Say changed my life too. He was just one of those people that you meet in your life, like a once in a lifetime kind of special person that kind of guided me in a lot of ways through my identity and my childhood, just because he had this venue and for the pure reason that he cared so much about music and wanted to see a music scene exist and succeed in Denver. And so playing Seventh Circle was just like, that was like college for me too.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, and in that too, I learned a lot about like the punk scene that I wanted so badly to be a part of.
Yeah.
Like I remember getting made fun of for like not having, you know, spikes and like dressing. Like, I'm like, what? This isn't what I thought this was.
That's a bummer actually. And that's something that I've talked with, you know, some old school punks who have been in bands like the Subhumans and Black Flag, like they all say that it ceased being punk when there was a way you were supposed to sound or a way that you were supposed to dress. The whole point of punk was that you did something that had never been done before.
Right, it's the antithesis. It's just not.
So if people are asking you to conform, they're not punk. That's like the least punk thing you can do.
Right. I mean, but, you know, in hindsight, it's just a bunch of confused kids all trying to fit in. And, like, they think, oh, this is the way to fit in. And then like, that's what society does, is, like, fucking band together and push other people out that aren't like them. It's just a microcosm of the world.
You know what's punk? Is we met you a couple of weeks ago at, I forget what it's called, Dillinger's? Is that what it's called?
That's right. That was my first time there.
The only reason I was there is because I was playing a show like a month ago, and we had this long time after soundcheck, and I heard that they had Yingling at Dillinger's, and you can't get
that. That's why you were so excited.
Yeah, and I was like, I got to go there. Yeah, it's like, I have to go there. So my girlfriend and I ended up there, and we saw some people we know, Ben Hanna.
In the bathroom.
In the fucking bathroom. And we started hanging out. Not in the bathroom. We exited the bathroom.
Well, we kind of hung out in the bathroom a little bit.
A little bit. But there weren't any corn dogs in the bathroom.
Well.
Which I'll get to. I think that one of the most punk rock things I've seen in a long time was actually you singing a Hall & Oates song, karaoke, at a bar in Lafayette, Colorado, while like making love to a corn dog. That was spectacular. Was that your first corn dog performance?
Yes. Yeah. Actually, wow, that's funny. This is all just coming back to me now. Yeah, yeah. But yes, that was the first time I had a corn dog on stage as a prop. Because I also, I don't know, I felt like I needed that to make me a little more comfortable. Because karaoke is so scary.
You killed. I mean, everybody was just freaking out. It was memorable. It ended up on the IG, you know.
Oh,
it was
just,
you know. Yeah.
But there was a time at the High Dive, actually, where I ordered a corn dog. And this, I am calling out Sputnik right now. I ordered a corn dog at Sputnik. Oh, no. About an hour before our set.
Yeah.
And it didn't come. So I didn't eat that day. And I was relying on that corn dog. I got two. And I had to go on stage without a corn dog. And I was doing my screaming and passing out. And then I started complaining about the corn dog for real. Like
on stage.
This is like the most angry I've ever gotten on stage. I'm like, where's my fucking corn dog? Somebody, God damn. And that's all everyone could say. It was like, did you get a corn dog? Are you okay? Yeah, fine. It's cold now.
Well, this time you learned to bring your own damn corn dog on stage.
Bring my own
fucking
corn dog.
Yeah.
I'm glad you thought that was punk rock.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. And you have some shows coming up.
Okay. It looks like we have a tour in May starting Wednesday.
You're just discovering this by looking it up.
Yes. I knew about this. I just didn't know when it was.
Where are you playing in May?
Man, I wish it said on my schedule. I think it's going to be a Midwest run. So I think it's going to start. Oh, I know we are playing in Fort Collins sometime in early May.
Okay.
Oh, we have another one. Saturday, May 25th with Bitch Flower.
Where is that?
I think at Surfside 7.
Oh, nice.
Or at the Atrium. I don't have the details on here, God.
Are you playing Foco MX?
Yes.
Me too. I'm playing with two bands that night. Or on Saturday. Are you playing Saturday or Friday?
Friday.
Oh, I'm not going to be up there on Friday.
Motherfucker.
But we really want to see you this Friday night as research.
Yeah. You got to know what it's going to be like.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's another question. For someone who hasn't seen Jesus Christ Taxi Driver Show, what should they expect?
I think you can expect for it to be a train wreck or the most incredible thing you've ever seen in your life.
Well, maybe it will be a train wreck that was the most incredible thing you've ever seen in your life.
And I want it to be either that or that. I don't want it to be mediocre.
It's going to be memorable.
It's going to be memorable.
Either way.
Yeah, whatever happens, something horrible or great is going to happen.
It sounds like, especially after seeing you like with the corn dog, you know, in that performance, that maybe your influences as a front man are like Iggy Pop, you know, with the peanut butter, or Nate Cook, especially in the early days when we were playing at the No Name Bar on Thursday nights. And like at the end of the show, he would be shirtless and just like out in the crowd.
Yeah,
you know, like that.
I think Nate and I are kindred spirits in that sense, and I think that's probably why he took a liking to us in the first place. But yeah, stuff will happen. I still have scars from the last one.
Yeah. It's not like a Gigi Allen thing where you're like self-mutilating.
No. I let other people do that for me.
To mutilate you?
Yeah. No, but I'm like a huge Cramps fan. And like that's maybe one of the albums is, it's a compilation though. It's the
Bad Music for Bad People.
Compilation, because that's the first time I heard the Cramps. But yeah, Lux Interior. That's kind of, I mean, that's why I started like putting the microphone in my mouth and... Mm. I love doing that for some reason. It's like, I think I told you this earlier too, but we like accepted 13th place in some, Indie 1023 thing. And I didn't know that I had to like go on stage and have Alicia, God, I think it's Alicia.
Well, it's confusing.
Ask me questions. Yeah. Cause there's Bruce, but we just call her Bruce. But I didn't know that we were going to have to, I was going to have to say something. And I was just there with Nate. And so none of my other band, I was like, Nate, please come with me. I didn't know I had to do this. I was like so nervous. And then the second I get on stage, she asks me a question and I can't think of anything. So I just put the microphone in my mouth and then spank myself. And like, that's how I deal with
anxiety.
Anxiety, I guess. And then I'm like, why did I do that? Now I have to stand up here.
You and Nate on stage is like the Ghostbusters. It's like crossing the streams. It's like, I don't know if it's a good idea. Like,
it's been done.
Well, and yes. You've done several shows where you were like a second or third guitarist in the Yoppers.
Yeah. Well, second. Because Nate, I think like it was right after Nate's bike ride. He hurt his hands.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he couldn't play guitar. So I just filled in for that. Actually, I think, did you do the Aerosmith cover with the
Yoppers? Yeah, Sweet Emotion. Yeah, yeah.
We did Aerosmith before. Because Jesus Christ Taxi Driver, kind of, we just sprinkle covers in every once in a while, but just like 20 seconds of one or something, just so we can get it all out of the way. But, you know, some things like lead into it. And we did Sweet Emotion. And one time Jesse and Nate came up to sing it. And we only do the Sweet Emotion part.
But just to tease.
But then Nate and Jesse kept going, and we're like,
"You're like, wait, we actually don't know how to play
the rest of it. I don't know. I'm not ready for this."
There's a video on YouTube of us doing "Sweet Emotion" at the Larimer Lounge.
I've seen it.
Like,
I've seen every opera's video
a lifetime ago.
I'm a super fan. You know, I'm really.
Yeah.
I think really the video. Trying hard not to jump over the table and just strangle you.
The video that I think. It's really good that we had it like well made and everything was the Jesus Car video from what was then Shug's, and before that it was like the B-Side Lounge, and since then it's been like 20 other things, but
yeah, it was just a bunch of live footage, right?
Yeah, we probably had 20 people there, but you know, we made a point to not show the crowd in the video.
Oh my God, Nick gets so anxious every time, like, not sold out.
So what are your number three and number four albums, and what colors are they?
Well, the Bad Music for Bad People is yellow. That's a different color. And then oh man, this is where it's gonna get really hard. Under Great White Northern Lights, White Stripes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What color is that one?
That one is gray. It's black and white, gray.
So the White Stripes are also a big influence on you?
Yeah, yeah.
You didn't start seeing shows until they were like long broken up, is what
No,
it
and actually my first show was Aerosmith and ZZ Top.
That's awesome.
ZZ Top was my first.
My first show of my life was in Pittsburgh. I was 14. And my brother had just got his driver's license. He took me to see ZZ Top.
Oh my God.
And it was incredible.
Yeah. Dude, as a kid too, like the spinning guitars and everything.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
He even, the drummer even had his bass drums mounted like flat instead of upright.
Oh, interesting.
And so the mallets were like hitting them up. And I think the drum set spun around, but it didn't flip over like a Tommy Lee thing. But yeah, it's great to see a spectacle like that. It's awesome.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Have you seen Jack White's male drummer?
From the Rock on Tour?
Duru Jones.
From the Rock on Tour?
No, for his solo stuff.
No, just the rock and tours drummer.
You love, his drums are all just like pointed forward. He is practically standing the whole time, just like, and plays with the, is that open handed? That's what it's called.
I got to check that
out. It's really cool. He's like the most punk rock drummer.
The drummer and the rock
and tours.
The drummer and the rock and tours, we saw them at the Mission right before the pandemic, and he's one of the best drummers I've ever seen.
Really?
He's phenomenal.
What's his name? He was in the Greenhorns too.
Man.
Yeah, I saw them at their 10-year anniversary in Third Man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and saw the Detroit Cobras there. That was so cool. Oh, and the Gories.
Who are the Gories? I don't know.
Oh, my gosh, dude.
Oblivions, I'll check them out tonight.
All this stuff that you were just showing me.
Yeah.
The Gories. Oh, my gosh. Detroit garage rock. So good.
I want to ask you, and you don't have to tell me, but you know, I like to... especially because I'm a dork, before I interview somebody, I want to listen to like their whole catalog. So I listened to all the Beavs stuff today, and then I listened to...
I should have sent you the second unreleased album.
Oh, that would have been good. There is like a two-song set about Jamie.
Uh-huh.
So it's about her revenge and then the consequences. Where's Jamie now?
Oh man, I don't know. I would love to know. But yeah, that was a girl in high school. I remember freshman year, and she was just like, you know, like a weird kind of like a weird girl, and like kind of smelly and stuff, and like people were just super fucking mean.
Aww.
And I, you know, I feel bad like not standing up for people like that more. Mm. In my life, which I'm making a concerted effort to do more. But yeah, that was, it's kind of a pretty fucked up concept, but it's like her shooting up the school.
So it's like the opposite of Jeremy, you know?
Oh, yeah. Is that, what the fuck is that called? Yeah, that band.
The Pearl Jam.
The Pearl Jam. I was about to call them White Cum or something.
I just read this... there's a book about Pearl Jam that came out last year, and school shootings sort of started to be a thing after that. And
they made it happen.
The director of the video consciously did this thing where you can't tell whether Jeremy kills himself or kills the students, because the students are covered in blood. And he just wanted to make it... you know, up in the air, up to interpretation, you know. But what really happened, what inspired that song was that this kid who was bullied got in front of the class and shot himself. And so the band Pearl Jam felt really, really bad that if anybody had seen that and thought that the kid shot his classmates and then, you know, were inspired by that, that obviously that would be terrible.
Yeah, I've actually never heard that. Only listened to Even Flow when I was a child.
Only the songs where you can't understand anything that he says.
But yeah, I mean, and that's, you know, that's also a product of just, you know, I mean, I think we left it a little open-ended, and, you know, I also wasn't the best writer when I was 18 or anything. Mm-hmm.
Well, it didn't sound like you were advocating for that.
Right. I'm not, not advocating for anything. It's like, I don't know. It's just kind of like a story that played in my head, and like feeling bad for this person. And then like kind of, but then in like the music video, we, kind of, cause you know, music videos are weird cause you don't really want to like, you know, guide somebody's like interpretation,
right? Exactly.
All that much.
Yeah.
But in the music video, in my interpretation of the music video, tried to leave it a little open-ended. But like, you know, she, the way that she kind of like the, there's a line in it that's like, Jamie's got a gun. She's going to blow them all away. Mm. And I guess like the metaphor for that in the music video is just like, her kind of finding her place. And I guess she like dresses up kind of like punk rock or whatever. Yeah. And like, I guess she like finds some sense of herself.
Yeah.
And and some confidence and goes back to school and everybody's like afraid of her now. Yeah, or like not afraid of her, but just like, whoa. Like, okay, you don't fuck with it. Don't fuck with her kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, it was, I don't know. But these are like loose concepts as a child. And like, I mean, so I just... I guess that's it. And then like
we should find out though. We should find Jamie and get her on the podcast.
Maybe that would be cool.
Yeah.
But yeah. I hope she's probably doing well. It's funny. All those people are just like assholes too in high school are doing so much better than the assholes always.
Yeah. Well, you probably watched Freaks and Geeks, right?
Uh-huh.
There's that great scene in the last episode. And I watched this with my kid before. I think she was in the sixth grade. So she was going through shit like that. And there's that great scene where the AV teacher says, all these people who you think are so cool and so untouchable right now, I want you to know this is the peak of their entire lives. Right. And you guys are just starting your ascent.
That is like, it's so true.
Yeah.
There's just something about like feeling that sense of entitlement then.
Yeah.
Because like everybody's like, at least in my view, like, it seems like everybody's just so confused, like, who am I, and, like, what am I doing here, and, like, what's my purpose, and, like, where do I fit in and everything, and, like, that was my whole thing, at least, and it feels like that's, I mean, like, I have a 17-year-old sister and a 20-year-old brother, and, like, kind of experienced their schooling through them a little bit, and, like, yeah, it's, like, you're just trying to figure out where you belong, and, like, I kind of neglected my own, like, what I wanted for myself a lot just because I was trying so hard to fit in.
Yeah.
A lot of the time. Because, like, I really felt like nobody else, you know, listened to the music I did and, like, were into the same kind of things that I was into and all that stuff. So I just had to, like, maybe I should try to be friends with the football players because people like them. But, you know, I was like, these guys are... not that cool, but that's the beauty of finding a best friend like Margot, or, you know, it's like, I don't need anybody else now. Like,
yeah. It sounds like that's how Demi and Baby were as well, the way they found each other.
Totally. Yeah. Their union is beautiful. They've been through some up and downs, and I think what they have now is really cool.
So did you impart this knowledge to your siblings? Like, you know, I've told my kid a lot when she started junior high. I said, you should be scared of, or at least wary of, anybody who acts like they know what the fuck is going on.
That's totally. You know? But you think they're so cool.
Like, right.
Because you're like, oh, you have the answers. That's why people join cults.
Yeah, right. Have you handed this down to your siblings?
They're also just like much more well equipped than I am in general. Like, I mean, I give them some pieces of advice and I try to, but I also remember how little advice helped me ever.
Right.
Like, Cause you know, people tell you all these cliches all the time and they don't make sense until they do. Like, you either have to fuck up and learn it for yourself or, you know, nobody can just tell you, like, trust me, like, you're like, okay, sure, but it doesn't come together until it does. So
Jesus Christ Taxi Driver is you and your brother,
and then there's Colin Kelly
from Augustus. Yeah. What's your brother's name?
Will Earhart.
Okay.
And then we've been having some, bass back and forth.
Yeah.
Lots of, I don't know, but, for the most part, it's Riley Marino. He's in a band called Horse Bitch and seven other bands.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, it's about,
that's how hard. You know, someone's good. Everybody wants him.
Exactly. He's great. I mean, he's 1000% the best musician in the band. But for these shows coming up, probably not for the show on Friday, but for the a couple more of these shows, we're gonna have our friend Emma Rose.
She's fantastic. Bass. I love Emma.
Oh, great. Yeah. She's so great. We've been, we were supposed to practice tonight, like I said. She's sick.
She doesn't need to practice.
No, she doesn't, but I like practicing. It's fun. But
man, I'd love to see her in the context of a rock band. I've not seen
that. She's great. She seems nervous, but then we practiced. We had our first practice, and holy moly, she was just so good. Like, it was just like fun playing with her because she was into it and she could like adapt, which is exactly what you need to do in this band. And she's just such a great bass player. And then her voice is fucking incredible.
It just melts me.
And luckily, it fits so well with our voices because like Will and I have the brother harmony thing. And then Colin has this amazing, unique voice. Mm-hmm. And then Emma just has this like also such a unique voice. And she can sing so low, too, and so, I mean, obviously so much higher than us, too. So,
do you think she would be in the band, like a member of the band?
Kind of. I mean, it seems like for the time being, it's going to be a back-and-forth situation for a while. You know, she requires big money. She's a she's a star. No, what? No, she's being very nice.
What a great story if Emma Rose leaves Big Richard to be in Jesus Christ Taxi Driver. Fuck yeah.
She did leave Big Richard.
She did leave Big Richard, but, you know, it would be amazing.
For a second, I thought that was like new news. I was like,
No. Yeah, that'd be amazing if that's where she ends up.
But then she's got Sound of Honey too, and that's great.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think she's working on a record right now for that.
How do you balance, you know, songs that are so raucous and so rock and roll with a song like Life Spills Out, like this heartfelt romantic stuff?
I was just thinking about this today because I was listening to Plastic Ono Band. Because I'm showing my friend the Beatles for the first time, pretty much. So, like, his favorite is Ram so far, but I was showing him Plastic Ono Band today, and I was noticing that like that same kind of thing, and I was like, oh, that must be it. It's a Beatles thing, like to just. And like I said at the beginning, I like all kinds of music, and sometimes I'm feeling soft, and sometimes I'm feeling hard.
Are you always speaking as yourself, or do you ever sing songs that are from somebody else's perspective?
So that's Roger. I'm singing from my friend's perspective, as his dog was dying, and he's ultra religious. So it's kind of like him wrestling with his God, kind of like, how could you let this happen if you love me, blah blah blah. But but then the funny thing is too, it's like it's coming from me too, so it's like, even though it's in his voice, it's like it relates to me, and I'm like, I can feel those words every time, and I have a different context in my head, like certain times. Like, I think it's just about like mourning death. Like,
yeah.
So yeah, I do. I'm trying more and more to like just do different writing exercises and think. And I do like to think through other people's perspectives, because I think I often just do that in everyday life.
Yeah.
And especially like if somebody, me seeing through someone else's eyes or pretending to, always will relate back to me in some way. So it feels like I can get different things out that otherwise I would struggle to say, maybe, because that's something I'm struggling with, is just being completely honest in the songwriting. It's really hard.
Yeah, well, that's what David Bowie did too, just making characters up that he could, you know, if he was anxious, he could be like, well, like, they're not seeing David Bowie tonight, they're seeing this other character,
Hunky Dory.
That's the one you like? That's your favorite?
That's my fifth.
Oh, that's your fifth.
Green.
Well, that's confusing because they had like three different covers. You know, there was the American cover, which was actually a fucking cowboy. It just said like, the man who sold the world. And then there was the actual one where He was laying on a day bed with the long hair.
Right.
That was banned in America when it came out.
That's the only one that I thought. Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Fuck yeah, David. Yeah.
Well, that is an album that, like, a lot of the songs sound like a different artist.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, but it all sounds like the same thing. That's one of my favorite things is, like, when an album can do that, like, you know, fluctuate and go on this kind of, you just kind of go on this wave with them, but it's like, it could be like a techno song on a punk rock record, but it's like, yeah, this is that band. That's still this band.
Yeah.
I know it sounds like this band just made a techno song. Like it doesn't sound, you know.
The band that the band that might have been most successful at that was Ween with Chocolate and Cheese. Every single song sounds like, and they even use different voices, you know, like vocal effects, like on Spinal Meningitis, or even the very first song, Take Me Away. It's just, and I've always been amazed at bands that can do exactly what you're saying, where it's a completely different even genre from song to song, but you're still like, oh, it's this mm-hmm. artist.
Well, I mean, I think, hearkening back to your question about the Beavs and like what, or and even this band and like what genre or whatever, it all just kind of, you love things and it all just kind of coalesces into one. Because I remember, like, on the first Beavs EP, like there's like that song Ugami, that's like kind of a ska or reggae song, and then it also has that. And I always like wanted to say like, yeah, we're a jazz punk soul reggae, but like I just said like every genre, because like I thought that's what we were, because I thought we included everything. But then there's like a part on that with a clarinet that's like do-do-do-do, and that's me just like putting jazz into the reggae and the punk rock. I don't know, I'm just like throwing everything in there. And then same with like you've listened to Goat Hell. It's like, that thing is all over the place.
Yeah.
That's the first time I've used, I think like MIDI instruments or like a, you know, like just like a synthesizer or something, like with the boop, 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 boop. Like it's like that, a techno-y thing or something. Like.
Well, it sounds like you're just someone who loves music. So you're not like you only love the blues. Or you only love rock. You only love punk. You just like music.
Yeah.
So, what are the plans for Jesus Christ, the Taxi Driver, in the future for a follow-up album and tour, and just what do you want to achieve? And what if you sign with some great label and they're like, you know that one song? We want you to just sound like that. That's what we want from you.
Well, that's not going to happen because we found the best label ever.
Okay. All right.
Midtopia. We've been having conversations with them.
Where are they based?
They're based in Wichita.
Okay.
And man, yeah, I should shout them out. They're like, they're not even really a label technically. It's like a nonprofit thing. But they take care of the bands so well. And what they're trying to do essentially is like, redefine the music industry and make it more in favor of artists, because, you know, people sign contracts and that's like every huge artist has a story about signing a shit contract and getting fucked over for the rest of their lives.
Yeah,
like even the fucking Beatles, I was just watching Hard Day's Night and they were saying like they, or not Hard Day's Night. It was the, documentary, but, they were saying like, yeah, we're not making a penny off these records. We got a tour.
Yeah.
That was my Ringo.
Creedence Clearwater is the band that probably got fucked the most. Because they were just a band from El Cerrito in the East Bay, and they were kids, and they found a label that would actually, like, manufacture some records for them. It was like, oh, we get to make
you
a record?
You would say no to that as a kid.
Right, right. And they said something about the contract when they were signing it. They were like, this is a really bad deal. And the label said, well, it's not like it's going to sell a lot of copies, so it doesn't matter anyway. And then they started selling millions of albums and didn't make any money off of it.
Yeah.
So that's not going to happen with Midtopia.
That's not going to happen with Midtopia. It's crazy. We keep asking the question, like, what's in it for you?
Because right.
I can't fathom that these people are genuinely doing this work because they love it.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, it's almost like a college course or something, too, because they have all these people on their team. And they're not just helping us, like, with lawyers and money and all these things. They're actually teaching us how to, like, read contracts and deal with our money and all these things. And I think their goal is, like, I mean, because this is what they've said, is, like, bands, there's so many good bands that just, you know, they'll go for maybe 10 years or something and fizzle out, like, with good music. But if you don't have money...
10 years, like, is a long time. That's maybe, that even right. Probably, like,
I'll say 5 years then.
Yeah.
That's the Biebs lifespan. There are bands that'll go like 5 years and they have great music, but if they don't have money, like, sometimes it just doesn't go anywhere. Like, distribution and promotion and all those things, it's like, holy moly, they're so important. I mean, I can't believe some of the stuff that gets, like, mass played and is, like, ultra popular. It's like promotion and marketing and everything. But they want to, like, make that possible and just cut out that fucking dirty dog money.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. And it sounds like they're teaching you to fish instead of giving you
exactly.
a fish dinner, you know. So that's fantastic.
It's really cool. So I think that's in the future. And as for an album, we have been writing, and we have a lot of songs that I'm really excited about. I just hope we can get them recorded the right way. I think we'll definitely work with Nate again. He's kind of like the fifth member of the band.
Those guys, just Nate and Jesse, know how to make albums.
Yeah.
And they know not to rush the process. And I could hear that on your records, you know, that they had worked on it. And I think I hear Nate's voice at one point, too.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Jesse's on there, too. He did the highest harmony on on Goat Health.
That's awesome. Ooh,
tell it on the call.
So you gave me your fifth record, and now, looking back, it was Joni Mitchell and the Beatles and David Bowie. Cramps. Somebody gave me, at my sixth birthday party, there was this kid there that gave me, this is how old I am, that it was a cassette, but they gave me a cassette of Bad Music for Bad People, and that definitely changed my life.
Yeah,
like, you know, those guys didn't go to the Berklee College of Music. I can tell you that.
No way. You know? But they're fucking expressing themselves in the purest way. And Poison Ivy as the fucking spearheading that band and, like, making it what it is. Like, it's, I love that they were so, like, attacked for being anti-feminist, yet it's, like, the most feminist band.
Right, yeah.
I love it.
That's crazy. When my kid was, like, 4 or 5, I remember she loved the song Bikini Girls with Machine Guns. She was so into that.
One of the Offers drummers has a tattoo.
Really?
Can you guess which one?
Which drummer? Has a Cramps tattoo?
Has a Bikini Girls with Machine Guns tattoo.
Really?
Yeah.
Probably not James. Noah? That's awesome. I met him at the Stanley Hotel one time. I wish I'd known that. That's amazing. That's great. Wow. Anyway, thank you for being here. And in between now and when this episode airs, I am planning on seeing you live, so I'll have a whole new perspective. Hopefully you have a corn dog too. You know.
I mean, it won't be a good show without a corn dog.
But thanks for doing this. It's really
thank you, Adam. This is really awesome.
I'll give you another hour, then I gotta run, I gotta fly away, leave you to fall.
That was Ian Earhart of Jesus Christ Taxi Driver talking with me about his band, about corn dogs, about God, and a lot more. Check them out at Foco MX in Fort Collins on Friday, April 19th, and at the Coast in Fort Collins on Sunday, May 12th. I will be playing the drums at Foco MX on Saturday, April 20th with Hunter Stone and also with Rolling Harvest. I love a good doubleheader. Thanks for listening. And please drop a review of Mile High Stash on Apple Podcasts if you can. Get in touch if you want with complaints, suggestions, compliments, psychiatric advice, really anything at milehighstash.com or milehighstash@gmail.com. See you next month.
Rise above duality, you wanna transcend day and night. I guess I'm old fashioned, I just don't share your passion for ever changing eternal twilight.